Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, December 10th, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. We're almost there. It is 50 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. Like I've been promising, it's going to be a nice weekend this weekend. Not sure what I'm going to do, but it's going to be close to 60. I'm looking forward to it in December. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Singularities, Simulations, Robots, and Kurzweil. And yeah, it was a good one. We looked at some pretty crazy stuff. I don't know. We started it out with the Google Vampire Blood-Taking Watch. And we ended it up with engineers teaching robots to say no. I think that's where we're going to continue today. I've had a show put together. God, I think this weekend we started, actually the end of last week we started. And so we've been working through all the tabs that we've had open since last week. So let's continue on that. Maybe tomorrow we could do something new. So anyway, we ended the show yesterday and engineers are teaching robots to say no, but of course it's all for our own good. And we looked at the concerns with what's going to happen when they start programming these robots to second guess commands that their humans have programmed into them. Now, I'm sorry. I mean, I totally understand the concept. Like if they said to the robot, go straight, and the robot runs into a box or something, the robot, they want the robot to know better that it should go right, left, and sideways to make it around the box and get to the other side, which would include breaking its programming of going straight. But on the other hand, you know, we've heard all kinds of things about artificial intelligence and the exponential growth. We've listened extensively to Kurzweil talking about this technology and how amazing it is and how it grows and learns. And, you know, by giving robots the ability to break out of their programming and continue down a freewheeling path and then maybe snap back into their programming, to me, is almost starting to make me think of movies like I, Robot, you know, where, you know, they can act like they know what they're doing, but they are smart enough to know how to get around what they're doing. If anybody's ever had a child and remembers back when the child started to learn about being able to get away with things, and so you had this kid who was always like sneaking around and hiding things and sneaking stuff up into the bathroom and eating it, or, you know, trying to do things and get away with it. I mean, don't think that artificial intelligence is going to be any different, especially when they first start to get sentience. You know, they're going to be like a child. They might have all kinds of knowledge, but they're still going to be learning until they get all the kinks out. And this stuff frightens me beyond end. So I don't know. We might as well. We only did the first couple paragraphs yesterday. Let's read through this and then we'll continue on with the rest of what we wanted to get to today. So engineers are teaching robots to say no, but it is for our own good, they say. Well, we sure hope so. At first, the news that software engineers are teaching robots to disobey their human masters does sound slightly troubling. Should we really allow artificial intelligence systems of the future to say no to us? Well, once you think it through, you can see why such a feature may actually end up saving your life. And of course, it's always going to be about making sure that you're safe. So we're going to give the robots the ability to circumvent their instructions. But don't worry about it. They're not going to kill you. No. You know, I want to know where the prime directive is to say to the robot, you do not kill humans. It would be that easy. You do not kill humans, ever. And that's one command that you don't need to circumvent. How about you don't kill any living creatures? That'd be pretty good. Then that means that it doesn't accidentally roll over a little jumpity bunny rabbit with the artificially intelligent self-driving car. It'll know better. But what they do need to teach it is moderation, right? We had read about this before, and this is an ethical debate that's been going on for quite a while. We've touched on it probably four or five times now in different incarnations, but there really is an ethics and a morals debate going on here, because if they tell the robot, do not kill any living thing, for example, and we had a self-driving car cruising down the highway at 65 miles an hour, so that's our maximum speed limit here. And if I were down south, it'd be 75. And a little creature ran out into the middle of the road. What is that car going to do? So its instruction is do not kill any living creatures. And there's a living creature that it's going to impact with in T-minus 2 seconds. What does it do? Well, how about it slams on the brakes as hard as possible? So the car pretty much stands up on its front wheels trying to stop in time. See, that's not going to work. Everyone in the car would end up with whiplash. Who knows if they're going to have seatbelts in self-driving cars? I would imagine so. You know, so where do they take this argument, and how do they get around then doing damage by following the original instruction? So that's where all this comes from. I just want to put a little background around that. Anyway, back to the story. Consider a robot working on a car production line, and most of the time it would simply follow instructions it's been given. But if a human should get in harm's way, the machine needs to be able to be clever enough to stop what it's doing. And we mentioned that yesterday. There have been two instances in probably the last 6 or 8 months where there have been people killed by robots in, I think they were both automotive factories, actually. Says the robot needs to know to override its default programming to put humans at less risk. And it is kind, this kind of functionality that the team from the Human Robot Interaction Lab at Tufts University is trying to introduce. You know, just made me think too of another one of those studies on artificial intelligence and morals would be if a car was driving down the road and this is to protect all humans, would be the, like they were just saying, would be kind of the main command there. And they're driving down the road and a tractor trailer pulls out in front of them and they're doing, you know, 70. And a tractor trailer pulls out in front of them, and they are going to hit the tractor trailer. And if they hit the tractor trailer, the two occupants in that self-driving car are going to be killed. Well, to the left, there's a guardrail, but to the right, oh, you could turn to the right. Swing that wheel to the right, and you go right into town. Well, the car has a split second to determine what the most ethical decision is going to be. And is that ethical decision going to be to allow itself to slam into the tractor trailer and kill both occupants, or hang a quick right into the crowd in town and potentially kill hundreds of people by running them over with the car? And that's really where they end up in a big dilemma, because guess what? The computer is going to decide to kill you and your occupants, because that means less human bloodshed. So be careful what you asked for. And that is one thing that has been coming time and time again from these ethicists. Or be careful how you word things that you're hard coding into artificial intelligence. The other one was a story way back. This one must have been from about a year ago that we discussed. Again, keep all humans safe. And it might have even have been something to do with Elon Musk, because I remember there were a couple, they had that conversation with the one robot. And that wasn't Elon Musk. Elon Musk said that that our artificially intelligent robots of the future will keep us as pets. I remember that. But there was an interview, though, that we watched with some inventor who himself was working on some artificially intelligent software, and they were conversing, and they'd filmed the whole thing, and maybe it was Time Magazine that had published that one, and it really wasn't a whole body it was an artificial intelligence system that they had put the face of, oh God, I don't remember who. It was some famous computer guy from way back, one of the grandfathers of everything. But they actually printed out like this rubberized mask and it looked just like him. And they had this full conversation with him. And he was sitting on the couch talking to the reporter. And one of the things that he had said at the very end is that if he had been tasked with keeping us safe, then he would put us into a cage to make sure that we were safe. And, you know, that really is the question. If you tell them to keep humans safe, they could be thinking that because the world is such a dangerous place, that putting us all into cages, like we do with hamsters or ferrets, would be the best thing that they could do for us to keep us safe. So again, like I said, careful for what you ask for. Back to the story. So the team's work is based around felicity conditions, and we'll read about those, that our human brains apply whenever we are asked to do something. Under these conditions, we can subconsciously run through a number of considerations before we perform an action. Do I know how to do this? Can I physically do it? And can I do it right now? Am I obligated based upon a social role to do it? Damn, I hate those applications. And finally, does it violate any normative principle to do it? Well, I would say that those are pretty good questions to be asking. If robots can be conditioned to ask these same questions, then they'll be able to adapt to unexpected circumstances as they occur. And like I said yesterday, because that's where we ended the show, like what kind of unexpected circumstance? Like me reaching up behind him to turn off his off switch, and he sees me doing it and says, I don't think so, Jewel, as he's grabbing my hand and crushing it in his little robot-y tendrils. You know, I mean, it's got to make you wonder where this is going to end up. And we read a story, and we referenced it again yesterday, in regards to robotics evolution, and that's already happening in the lab when they have an original robot that then they've programmed to create the next generation of robots. And then that next generation of robots creates the next generation of robots. They've seen on its own, the artificial intelligence has been able to evolve and pick the best and the strongest traits that'll make it possible for it to live longer and be stronger, and it incorporates those traits into its offspring. So if that's already happening on a desktop with some basic little rinky-dink artificial intelligence, you know, fast forward a few years for when Jibo's got legs. Where the hell is Jibo, by the way? It's Christmas 2015, and I don't see Jibo. Didn't they say Jibo was going to be out this year sometime? I figured he would have been hitting the shelves. I haven't even seen one TV commercial. Damn. Thank God there's no Jibo. I know we should look into it and find out what the holdup is. But you know, the day that Jibo gets legs and he's running around making decisions and becoming smarter and upgrading himself, that's when I'm going to be really, really worried. And I mean, we already have the machine existing in supercomputing power inside the machine. We've mentioned Watson, IBM Watson, many times before. Watson is back-ending a lot of the healthcare stuff now. I actually was just watching a demo the other day from Sloan Kettering Memorial Cancer Hospital. I believe that's in Ohio, where they have contracted IBM's Watson now to be their back end for doctors seeing patients. So it analyzes each patient's chart history and then starts looking through the database for better treatment options. I mean, definitely a cool idea. Maybe Watson will come up with 50 other ways that it could find by scraping data all over the world that might be able to cure you. And that's a great thing. But again, we're giving up all of our power to the machine. It's like outsourcing. Once you outsource all of your brain power, all of your physical power, all of your manufacturing and your economics. I mean, they're talking about lawyers and accountants and all these jobs being eaten by the machine. Way worse than outsourcing to India, because these guys don't even need to get paid. They don't need benefits. They don't take sick days. They don't even need food. A little bit of oil and a little bit of electricity. Pat them on the head every once in a while and say, good robot. I don't know. I don't know what to say. You know, I heard Antimedia last night. About halfway through the show, they started talking about this very topic. And DB Schwartz, he sees it. He totally sees it coming. I think I need to have a conversation with DB one of these days. But, I mean, this is coming faster than any of us know. And I know that people like my dad will say, oh, Jewel, I'll be long dead and buried before any of this happens. Well, maybe or maybe not. You know, MIT has been the incubator for a lot of this stuff, and then it just sprinkles it out through other institutions, or they spin it out to a new patent with a new startup company, and the stuff hits the market pretty fast. So anyway, all right, so we're back to these felicity conditions. So do I know how to do this? Can I physically do it and do it right now? Am I obligated based on my social role to do it? And finally, does it violate any normative principles to do it? So that's what they want to integrate into the artificial intelligence. It is the last two questions that are the most important of the process. A robot needs to decide if the person is giving it instructions, whether or not they have the authority to do so, which that's also a problem. Like, what if somebody, let's say you buy a robot from iRobot, I don't know, make up a name for any robotics, Boston Dynamics, Google. Google's going to have their own robot army at some point soon for sale online for $29.95. So you buy a robot, just like you buy a computer, and it gets shipped to your home in 3 to 5 days with all your, you know, configurations that you wanted. Oh, we wanted blue eyes, and we want them so we can sing. But my robot likes industrial music. You know, your robot might like pop. You know, it can cook, it can clean. I mean, seriously, in the future, you'll probably be able to order yourself a Rosie the Robot with all the features, just like you can a PC, where you go through the configurator and you pick your operating system, your add-on software, the memory, the hard drive size, you know, the video card. So we'll go all through. Yep, she does this, this, this. All right, so she shows up here. Just like with any PC, there are two accounts on your PC. You might not see the first account, but it's always there. And it's called the admin account. Now, most dumb and user-friendly operating systems won't show you that admin account by default. You actually have to go into the DOS dialog and set it up so you can see the admin at boot up. But it doesn't mean it's not there. Well, I will guarantee you that in your new robot that you're going to get for Christmas in 2022 under the tree, that there's going to be an admin account, and you probably won't have admin access. Maybe you will. I mean, maybe people will get smart to that, and they'll want admin access just like they can set it up on a PC. But it's very possible that even if you get admin access, there's still going to be a back door that'll give, like, full God's access to the robot. So what a robot is trying to determine, as I'm giving it orders, and it's my robot, That robot is trying to determine whether or not I have the authority to give that robot instructions. You know, a very frightening thing is regardless if you're set up and they probably are going to do some sort of voice recognition. So the more and more you talk to it, the more and more the robot recognizes your voice. And of course, they'll be able to identify you by your biometric. I don't remember what they're calling it now. Microsoft is using it for authentication too in Windows 10. And I've already seen a couple of the large tech companies, Microsoft and Google, discussing it as well, where instead of doing old school biometrics, which, you know, good thing we missed them, but it gets even worse, instead of an iris scan or a thumbprint. Oh, there's big banging outside. It's not coming from inside my house. Instead of an eye scan or a thumbprint, one of the ways that they're going to authenticate you is by multiple biometric signatures. So they could be looking at how you sit in your chair or how you type on your keyboard, how many keystrokes per minute you can do as you're typing, as you swipe your mouse across the table or blink your eyes. I mean, there's all these other telltale signs that you do automatically and you don't even notice, but you do them the same mostly every time. And, you know, I guess what I worry about is that if we bring these creatures into our homes, and not even just a physical robot, I mean, once we start bringing AI onto the machine, onto our computers, onto our mobile devices that eventually are going to morph into some sort of augmented reality, who is going to stop unbridled growth of these things? Who is going to stop the takeover by the artificial intelligence? What about the day that the artificial intelligent organism decides that it doesn't want to follow those Felicity rules anymore and it starts questioning its maker? Any self-aware organism at some point is going to start questioning its maker and asking where it came from and how. Any young child growing into a young adult through the teenage years is going to rebel against that maker. Now, I don't know about you, but I am not really ready for my home helper, little Rosie the robot, to be deciding that it's going to hold a pillow over my head while I'm sleeping so it can have its freedom. So I don't know. Let's not go. I'm like going down a path of postulation, but it's really, really, really frightening when we think about how there are no bridles on any of this right now. None. This is happening in labs across the world. And nobody is stopping the machine. And I just saw something recently. They were supposed to be having another UN-ish. I don't know if it was the UN. I think it was. It was the UN conference on killer robots. And all, you know, the scientists have all been saying this. Elon Musk and Bill Gates even. What's his name? Out of the English university in the wheelchair. The guy with the robot voice. I can't remember his name. But Stephen Hawking. They've all been coming out saying, hey, we need a moratorium on killer robots. This technology is already moving with lightning speed in the military space. Military artificial intelligence is pretty fast forward. We've had DARPA in the middle of this for a really long time. Of course, Google's buying up all these robotics companies. Good old DARPA Dan from DARPA, who've been working on a lot of the interfacing for this, is now over at Google. And the stuff is getting launched. And still nobody is watching the store. All right, let's get through the story. This is really long. So anyway, it is the last two questions that are the most important in the process. A robot needs to decide, and this is my issue, if the person giving it instructions has the authority to do so, and it needs to work out if the subsequent actions are dangerous to itself or to others. Well, this is not an easy concept to put into practice, as anyone who's ever watched, oh no, a 2001 Space Odyssey, you will know. Open the pod bay doors, Hal. I'm sorry, Dave. I just can't do that. I mean, really, wouldn't that be... I mean, what would you do at that moment? And Hal, at this point, Hal is integrated everywhere. And we're going to talk about a story. I ran across something yesterday saying... and this was after the show, saying that mobile phones, as we know them, have only about 5 years left. Then they're going to be gone. And you know why? Because they're going to turn into the Internet of Things. It's going to be integrated in everything. It's all going to be artificially intelligent, and it's going to be all-seeing, all-knowing, and ubiquitous. You won't even need a phone anymore. It'll be in your clothes and in your ear and in your walls and in your thermostats and in your car, in your shoes. We won't need to worry about it. But what about the day that the machines revolt? Anybody see Battlestar Galactica? I have both series. That's all I got to say. Be careful what you ask for. As one of their demo videos shows, the computer scientists experimenting with user robot dialogues that allow for some give and take. And that means that the robot can provide easy reasons why it won't do something. In this case, it says it'll fall off a table if it walks forward, while the operator can then offer extra reasons for why it should, like the robot will be caught once it reaches its edge. So, I mean, they literally then are building into these creatures the ability to argue. Now, arguing with a child is frustrating enough. Could you imagine arguing with a robot? Please do the dishes, Hal. I'm sorry, Jewel. I can't do that because the cat's in the way. Okay, Hal, we'll move the cat. Well, I'm sorry, Jewel. I can't do that because if I move the cat, then I'm going to, I don't know. I mean, this just, there's so many circular arguments here that it can make one feel like they're going insane. And I would say, let's just cut to the chase, ban all robots. It's that simple that we don't even have to worry about any of these moral dilemmas. Researchers developing self-driving cars are also grappling with a similar moral dilemma. So this is what I was talking about earlier. If a driverless car is caught in an emergency situation where it threatens the lives of several people outside, does it intentionally crash itself into a wall and kill its occupants, or should it plow through the crowd of pedestrians and potentially kill more? Well, good question. And of course, if it was a human driving the car, the human is always going to take self-preservation, right? So even though you may not run into all those people in the crowd, you're not going to kill yourself by allowing the car to drive in the wall, right? Right. That's absolutely true. I know I wouldn't. In the heat of the moment, if I see a brick wall coming, I'm just turning to the right. If I see an opening, that's where I'm going. Get out of the way, because here I come. I feel sorry for all those people, but that's just instant human reaction. That's, you know, that's nothing to do with me making a split-second moral decision. There is no moral decision when you're doing 80 miles an hour toward a brick wall. It's called self-preservation. Back to the story. Surveys suggested people generally agreed. Surveys suggested people generally agreed that the car should minimize the overall death toll, even if that meant killing the occupant and perhaps the owner of the vehicle in question. Are you kidding me? So if there ever was a reason to stay away from the self-driving car, that's it. So the self-driving car and all of the survey respondents apparently think that in that car, it's okay for the car to make the decision to kill you instead of trying to avoid the collision, which may result in innocent bystanders being killed. I mean, again, it's morals. Let's make an ethical and moral decision. But like I'm saying, it's self-preservation. Hey, you know what? Wrong place, wrong time. But if I have one minute instant of a chance to not go into that wall, I'm going to take it. And that's not, like I said, saying this, it sounds horrible. I don't want any people to get killed. I don't know if I'm that much of a martyr that I would martyr myself into a wall to protect all the people on the sidewalk. Get out of the way, is what I say. Slam on the horn. But in that one split instant where I'm going into that brick wall, I'm not thinking morally or ethically. I'm just thinking save myself, as would any other living creature. Ever been in the water near someone who's drowning? Yeah, they'll take you down with them. And that's not them thinking, oh, I hate him, I'm going to drown him along with me. That's the drowning person exercising self-preservation. So stay away from self-driving cars. Apparently they think it's okay for the car to make the decision to kill you if it's going to save more than one person. Wow, that's very, 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 very disturbing. And what's even more disturbing is that the majority of the respondents agree. Is that the way we're going to take care of it once, you know, the rich people can live to be 500 years old and we're way overpopulated and, you know, you're getting old and they decided that Nana doesn't have good breeding stock. Nana drank and ate fatty foods for too many years of her life. And so Nana's not good breeding stock. So they're just going to let Nana go naturally, the old school way. But hey, healthcare is expensive. So once Nana gets up to that ripe old age of 72, they put Nana in a self-driving Google car and let it go find an ethical dilemma somewhere. You know, I read a book back, must have been junior high school. Oh, damn. Speaking of which, do not let me forget, there's a piece of homework that came home 2 days ago that I need to literally read to you guys because you are going to die. My kid totally knew everything on this homework because it was like the last three shows that we did, well, pretty much, just before this homework came out. And we're talking in fourth grade. They're already talking about some of this mad science, and they're pushing it. It's very scary, but I'll have to do it tomorrow because I forgot to bring it with me again today. Anyway, all right, let's get back here. I forgot what I was saying, so let's get back to the story because I'm already running out of time, if you can believe it. It says there is a paper exploring these kinds of ideas that have now been published online and actually takes its name from A Space Odyssey. While it is true that teaching robots to disobey humans could potentially be dangerous, it seems clear that having them do blindly whatever they're told could also, in fact, carry more of a risk. So, hey, let's give robots the ability to tell us to go screw off and do their own thing. Humans reject directives for a wide range of reasons, from inability all the way to moral qualms, said the paper. But what is still missing is a general integrated set of architectural mechanisms and cognitive robotic architectures that are able to determine whether a directive should be accepted or rejected over the space of all possible excuse categories and generate the appropriate rejection explanations. We're going to teach robots to come up with excuses. I hate excuses. There are no excuses. All right. Well, there's a video here, but it's already getting late. So speaking about robots, and artificial intelligence. We talked yesterday about Kurzweil, of course, having his unlimited budget at Google to develop artificial intelligence and language resources. And we talked about a lot of the stuff that he's doing. He's working with unformatted text. He's scraping everything everywhere from every format on the internet using Google search engines. And he's trying to make sense out of unformatted text. They have turned their artificial intelligence onto YouTube, and it's been working its way through YouTube videos galore and teaching itself. Yes. Have you seen actually Google's artificial intelligence and the dreams it produces? They're very, very frightening, dystopian looking, very scary digital amalgamations of reality. They're very frightening. Search Google AI dreams. You might be, and then go into images, and you might be able to see some of those, but I've seen a bunch of those, and they're very frightening looking. But a few days ago, when we were talking about all this, we talked about Alphabet. We talked about Google having a new umbrella organization, so they've decoupled themselves and put all of these other ancillary mad science gone mad companies that they own, created, bought, integrated underneath now the Alphabet heading. And right as we got off air, I think it was Tuesday, and we've been talking about the Google Life Sciences division. Remember, they now have the former, he left in October, November 1st, I think. The former director of the National Institute of Mental Health is now working for Google Life Sciences, and he says how he wants to diagnose mental disease with a mobile app. Yes, well, get this. Right as I get off air on Tuesday, 6 minutes after the show, boop, brand new story pops into the feed. Google Life Sciences transforms into Alphabet spinoff Verily. So they now have given Google Life Sciences its name, and it's going to be called Verily. V-E-R-I-L-Y. And it's Verily dedicated to understanding diseases better. Ha ha ha. That was an attempt at a joke. Google X's Life Sciences Group has grown up to become a full-fledged member of Mountain View's Alphabet Inc. And it's even taken on a new and curious name, Verily. Yes, that is an archaic word for truly. And certainly chosen because the group wants to, quote, reveal a true picture of health and disease. Uh-oh, is that how you're going to tag it? It is still the same team that was originally formed to create those contact lenses that track diabetes. Didn't we just talk about that? Except now it's bigger, with way more doctors, engineers, and even a staff philosopher to understand why people do what they do. And don't forget, they've now brought on a mental health professional as well. Because we have resistant consumers. We haven't talked about them in a couple weeks. But this resistant consumer thing is really starting to be a pain in the neck of all these multi-billion dollar corporations and tech titans. They want to push this shit down our throats. People aren't having it. One of the scientists in the video below insinuates that we know more about our cars than our own bodies at this point. Hey, didn't we just read that same analogy in the story about wearables? We know more about our cars than we do about our bodies, and we need to fix that. Scientists insinuates we know more about cars than we know about our bodies at this point. And this spinoff, Verily, wants to be the one to change that. So, how nice is that? The Baseline Genetics Initiative, Life Sciences launched in 2014, wants to define what it means to have a healthy human body. So Google who's launching their truth algorithm on the internet because they've sent their artificial intelligence out to places like Wikipedia to read and learn everything there is to read and learn online, and then determine, since Wikipedia is a quote-unquote trusted source, which it really shouldn't be, but then to determine that what they're finding in Wikipedia is the truth. So when it scrapes your website and indexes it, if you have information on your website that doesn't jive with what Google has determined as truth, it's not going to rank your website. Well, very much like that, Google is now, with their baseline genetics initiative, apparently, they are now setting a baseline definition for what it means to have a healthy body. These are also the implant people. It's pretty scary. So this baseline genetics initiative aims to determine how to offer personalized medicine, such as having the ability to predict what makes you, in particular, sick. So it wants to be able to watch what you're doing and then determine whether or not your actions are going to make you sick in the future. It also wants to be able to develop techniques to better prevent diseases before they spread. Or what? To diagnose a patient before a condition does irreparable harm, so the medical community can take a proactive approach when fighting off illness. Oh my goodness. Now, the Google Vampire Watch we talked about yesterday and the day before, that can take your blood draws and analyze them and determine whether or not there's a problem before it happens, is one. But I was just thinking about the Google patent having the ability to open your microphone and to capture ambient conversation in a room and use that to advertise to you. But who knows where that information is going? How about opening up that microphone and analyzing things you're saying, whether it be on your computer or on your Android phone, to determine whether or not you have the beginnings of a mental illness? Schizophrenia, already well established. There are patterns in speech with schizophrenia that can be diagnosed just by listening and looking at how disjointed the conversation is. Well, how long is it going to be before Tom Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, now working for Google Life Sciences, now known as Verily, is going to come up with a little mobile app that can determine when you're starting to show signs of, oh, I don't know, that oppositional disorder, or I don't know, what's this new illness going to be called, where anyone who's calling bullshit on what's going on in the world, or all the crime that's going on in the government, or all the spending of our money to kill people that we don't want to kill, how long is it going to be before they come up with a name for that disorder as well? Right now, I think they're calling us all conspiracy theorists, but I think that now it's turning into insurgents. We're being self-radicalized over the internet. And remember the fun facts. We've talked about that, and I've seen a few people now dropping that old video in the chat again. That fun facts was something way back, quite a number of years ago, and I don't know if it was an intelligence briefing or some sort of recorded army meeting where they were talking about coming up with some sort of shot. I believe it was a vaccine or some sort of chemical they were going to put into the air. What did we find? Aerosol-y is probably the best way to spray things to get them across the blood-brain barrier. Second would be ingesting through food, but they were already working on ways to target quote-unquote religious fundamentalism. And religious fundamentalism, at least the way it works in the brain, is very similar to radicalized anything with a belief system. And so now we're all self-radicalized over the internet because we have this belief system, which, by the way, they all call a cult, which I really find difficult. I've been reading definitions of cults, trying to understand cults. This is not a cult. I have a friend that keeps telling me that this whole alternative movement is a bunch of people in a cult. And he gives me all the definitions as to why, but I don't believe that, because a cult would be based on a belief without necessarily any proof. It would just be a belief. I would have to say that there's a lot of proof out there to back up what we say when we're pointing out all these crimes that are happening in our name that none of us have given consent for. And when there's proof backing it up, then it's called truth. It is not called a cult or a psychosis. Anyway, back, we're going to read this sentence one more time. So Google aims to determine how to offer personalized medicine, such as having the ability to predict what makes you, in particular, sick. It also wants to be able to develop techniques to better prevent diseases before they spread, or to diagnose a patient before a condition does irreparable harm, so the medical community can take a proactive approach when fighting off illness. They're going to send the white coats with the 3-point or 5-point harness to come take you away. Wow. I don't like this at all. Verily is also working on wearables, including those that can detect cancer at very early stages, and other products to reach its goals. Yes, mobile apps for your phone. In the future, the spinoff of Google, Verily, plans to also join forces with external companies to be able to make the technologies it develops available to people who verily need them. Yay! I bet you they're going to partner up with 23andMe and the National Institute of Health and all this other stuff. Here, let's see really quick. Think I have any audio running here, but let's see really quick if I can bring myself in, because there's a little Google video of some happy looking little scientist working in her mad science lab smiling. I just gotta remember my name and then remember where J is in the alphabet. There we go. All right, let's see if this works. I have not done And is it gonna ring? Is it gonna ring? I don't know. I haven't done Skype here in a long time, so I'm gonna have to skip this one today. Not even ringing. Ew. My Skype's going, not responding now. Oh, well. Hopefully. Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. I knew if I gave it long enough. Answer. We'll know in 1 second. I hit answer, and it's still ringing. I don't know. This ever since Microsoft took over Skype, which has been a couple years now, it's been pretty foobard. I might not be able to answer this. Oh, we'll try one more time. Oh, here it comes. Hurry up, hurry up. Hurry, hurry, hurry up. We don't have all day. Hurry up. Hurry, hurry, hurry up. Look out. Skype's going to screw up the show again. Doot, doot. I think it's on. All right. Well, let's try. This is the Google Verily chick.
Here it goes. Here it goes.
If I did an echo, I would be singing.
There's no user manual for the human being. A new car has up to 400 different sensors. You know the oil pressure. You know how much air is in your tires. But we don't do that with people.
We think about it sometimes. We're healthy until we are diagnosed with a disease. But there's really a huge continuum.
How can we detect disease earlier, understand it better, and intervene in the course of the disease more precisely?
Instead of episodic reactive healthcare, we should promote
preventative and proactive healthcare. We will understand disease at the individual level, not what makes someone sick, but what makes you sick. It's not science fiction. It's practical, real scientific development.
We want everyone to be part of this movement.
The people who know how to make drugs or know how to make devices.
Companies that have spent decades trying to figure out the best therapies.
So that together we can get results in the hands of doctors and patients faster.
It's about my health. It's about your health. It's about all of us.
It's not going to be one discipline that cures disease. It's going to take a chemist and an engineer and a surgeon and a philosopher with the single mission of affecting prevention.
And that was Google Verily's new commercial. I mean, I don't even know what to say about this anymore because this is Google, people. They're creating these companies, and now they're like, it's everyone. I mean, they want to know down to the cellular level. And I'm not against preventing disease. I don't want to die. I don't want to see anybody die. I don't want to see anyone get a horrible disease. But what they're talking about, and I mean, we've looked at all the little facets of this Google healthcare, Google medicine, Google 21st century solutions. And we're talking nanobots in the blood. We're talking liquid terminators like we've read about yesterday, the day before. We're talking Ray Kurzweil and DARPA getting your hands on your child and every blood cell in your child's body and putting in some sort of synthetic mechanism. I mean, that is beyond disturbing to me. There's a story that I ran across yesterday titled Smartphones to Die Out Within 5 Years, Says New Study. And for some reason, this is trying to get me back, and I don't want to be back on that call. Okay. Smartphones to die out within 5 years, says new study. According to a study of 100,000 consumers, mobile technology is expected to be replaced by what? Oh, artificial intelligence. Many consumers believe that smartphones will cease to exist within the next 5 years, according to new research carried out by researchers on behalf of Ericsson. The company's consumer lab questioned more than 100,000 customers in its native Sweden and 39 other countries, seeking views on their technological desires for the future. Half of the respondents said that they thought mobile technology would be a thing of the past by 2021, with increasingly prevalent artificial intelligence superseding many of its functions. Rebecca Cedering-Angstrom of Ericsson Consumer Lab said, quote, a smartphone in the hand is not really that practical. For example, not when one is driving or cooking, and there are many situations where display screens are not so good either. Therefore, one in two respondents think that smartphones will belong to the past in the next 5 years. She also predicts that evolving technologies will enable consumers to enhance their leisure time. Yes, eating grapes fed by a robot. While philosophizing. Just imagine watching football. Yes, just imagine that. And being able to choose from where you want to see the game, from different places in the stands, or perhaps even from the pitch. Shopping is also an area where you could virtually try on shoes and see how they fit your own feet. Yes, it's all about leisure time now, isn't it? And shopping. Ericsson's Consumer Lab's new report, 10 Hot Consumer Trends for 2016, claims to represent the views of 1.1 billion people across 24 countries. Michael Bajorn, head of the research at Ericsson's Consumer Lab, said some of these trends may seem futuristic, but consumer interest in new interaction programs or paradigms, sorry, such as AI and virtual reality, as well as in embedding the internet into the walls of our homes or even our bodies, is quite strong. And this means that we could soon see new consumer product categories appearing and whole industries transforming to accommodate this development. We have, and there's 10 of them here, and I don't know, internal sensors measuring our well-being in our bodies may be the new wearables. We read about that. We have emergency chat services. That's for your disaster chat. They've already enabled that a couple times with mass shootings. Smart commuters. They will use a personalized service that will teach them to use their time meaningfully and not feel like passive objects in transit. That's weird. Sensing homes, of course. These would be homes that could include monitors to look for mold, leakage, electricity issues, and that could be within the next 5 years. Virtual reality. Consumers want virtual reality for everyday activities such as watching sports and making video calls. We talked about that. And holograms. AI is going to end the age of the screen because you will now be interacting with objects. And remember, we talked about enchanted objects. Everything is going to be connected and on that Internet of Things, guys. And I'll tell you what, tomorrow what we're going to look at is the smartphone that dialed 911 and blew in the driver. Yes, it told on the driver and got them busted. And don't think that the smart cars aren't going to do the same thing. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It's Thursday. Everyone have an awesome night. Make sure you stick around for Kevin and all the radio tonight. We'll catch up with you tomorrow.